Hi, everybody. We're recording today's episode of Adapting the Future of Jewish Education on December 9th, 2022. And today we are looking at the work of one youth professional who works in the Jewish teen space, but using that as a lens into the entire world of Jewish youth and teen engagement. There's a bit of background which is important for today's episode, which really focuses on both my own personal and professional commitment to Jewish teenagers and the research of this demographic, because I intrinsically believe, like our guest Ira Miller does today, that the adolescent years are perhaps the most formative in the development of young people, and therefore the work that we do with them matters not just in the teenage years, but well beyond that as well. So without preempting too much of the interview with Ira, I do want to highlight a couple of things in this introduction, which I think are really important. And the first that I wanted to really mention was that Ira talks about teenagers as people of today and not just as people of tomorrow, which is a theme that we've spoken a lot about at the Jewish Education Project. But in doing so, he also acknowledges that these are adults waiting to happen in terms of the work that we're doing with them today does impact the adult lives that they will evolve into. And importantly, he also talks about the Jewish community that they will build as a result of their Jewish teen experiences. There's another piece of this interview which is extremely important, and that is people listening to the interview will realize that it starts off talking about the formal role of a youth director and then swiftly moves into a conversation that this is more than just a profession, more than just a career, but this is a real true passion. And the emotional part of this investment in this job is also really important. And I think I want to pay tribute even in this introduction to the thousands of people out there who work with Jewish youth on a professional level, but also invest so much of themselves in this holy work. I also want to mention that in this episode, when we explore some of the emotional role that is played in the life of a youth professional, we do talk about suicide and the taking of one's life, which could be a warning for some people. They might want to fast forward that part of the episode towards the end. It's an important part of the story because it really directs at what we're trying to get at today, that being a youth professional is not just a career, it's not just a job, but for so many people, they do give of their full selves to the work that they do with today's youth. And finally, Ira talks about fundamentally that this population, although often seen in disparaging terms by the rest of the world, is really one of light and one of hope and one of optimism that we can all learn from and actually strive to create in our own environment. So today's episode is one which goes on a bit of a journey. It's a bit of an emotional roller coaster at times, but it really is one of optimism and really highlights the importance of working with Jewish teenagers today and what an incredible role and incredible opportunity they play for the world at large.
This is Adapting, the Future of Jewish Education, a podcast from the Jewish Education Project, where we explore the big questions, challenges, and successes that define Jewish education. I'm David Breifman.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of Adapting. And I'm here with my colleague, Ira Miller, who is the Director of Informal Education at Washington Hebrew Congregation. Ira has worked in this field since 1994 and is recognized throughout the Union of Reform Judaism as a pioneer of synagogue youth work. In this episode, I'm really interested in talking to Ira about his work in the Jewish teen space, specifically over so many years when I'm just going to imagine that quite a few changes have taken place. So, Ira, thanks so much for joining us on Adapting today.
Thanks so much for having me, David. I'm excited to be part of the conversation.
So I know it's not a competition, but in my estimation, you might be one of the longest serving youth directors in North America. And I'm now anticipating many, many people calling me up saying they've been involved longer. I welcome their calls. But I want to start with that and ask you, what is it about this job that keeps you in it? Why do you love doing what you do? And maybe even start by explaining to the audience, how do you talk about the job that you're actually doing these days?
So the job I'm doing now, you know, it definitely has evolved over time. I've been at my current job for 20 years. So I started as your kind of typical youth director. I now share, my job has expanded a bit. I now really run most of everything that takes place for our post-B'nai Mitzvah students, whether it's youth group or non-youth group. Our what we might call formal educational program for high school students doesn't look like most formal programs. I don't love the back and forth between informal and formal education. I like to think of quality education and different ways of giving that and providing that to students.
So let's just explain what you mean when you say you're a typical youth director. What does a typical youth director role look like in your mind?
A typical youth director is someone who runs youth groups, who provides opportunities for kids of whatever ages, whether it's younger kids or teens, to be together in social settings, to really experience Jewish living, to find the joy in Judaism, to find community in Judaism and not really be so focused on an end goal of learning Hebrew or having a bar mitzvah or being confirmed or whatever some of the kind of more traditional life cycle steps might be, but about finding their own place in a community, finding their own place in a congregation. You know, one of the things that I've noticed for a very long time, and this is whether it was early in my career or much more recently, is that adults don't have as much time for kids as they used to in all the different settings. Kids have a lot of adults in their lives. And over the last several decades, and even before that, more and more parents work. Whether you have one parent or four parents or however many parents you have, they're probably all working and they're very busy. Teachers have more students and more crowded classrooms than ever before. Coaches have more pressure to win than to help kids just grow and develop young people. And I think there's this magical thing that's happened where synagogues and Jewish communities have said, we want to have someone who's there to listen to kids talk, to be there, to see kids, to acknowledge them, to be part of their lives in meaningful ways. And I feel so lucky to have had the opportunity to be in that role for so many kids over the years. And I continue to have that role with the teens I have now and the teens that I had 20 years ago who aren't teens anymore, who are parents themselves. And I think that's just really an incredible thing. And in terms of the youth group, not just the youth director, for young people to find connection and to find community, I'm amazed. I don't want to get into the makeup of our youth group board. We're a different structure than a lot of places. We have a very inclusive youth group leadership structure. And when we kind of formalize that at the end of each school year, we have students share a little bit about what their involvement and why they want to be more involved as a leader in the group. And kids 14, 15 years old, without any prompting, will get up in front of their peers and say, I love the sense of community I have here. I love that I can be my true self here. And I think that's just what teens are looking for. They're looking for a place where they can be their true selves. They so often feel like they have to wear a mask in different spaces or fit into different, you know, preconceived notions. And when they see me being my true self, I think they take a deep breath and like, okay, I can just be who I am. And I don't expect them to be anything other than who they are. I don't put pressure on them to be something that they're not. The only pressure I maybe put is to encourage them to be the best version of themselves that they can be. And I think when teens are struggling in so many areas, to have a place, to have a person who sees them for themselves and for their authentic selves, I think becomes really powerful.
Just to give people a perspective here, Washington Hebrew Congregation, how many members?
We're about 2,000 families, so we are a large congregation. And we are located on two campuses, so we're geographically spread out as well.
And approximately how many kids have a bar or bat mitzvah ceremony every year through the congregation?
Somewhere in the range of 75 to 100.
All right, great. So that's laying the framework here. This is a pretty big place compared to most other congregations that we're talking about. I now want to just like explore this further with you because for me, it's familiar and we can talk about my background in researching teenagers, but for some people here, it might not be as familiar. There are boards, there are elections, there's governance. You just threw a whole lot of things in there. So just talk a bit about like what this actually means. I mean, I think of youth group as a place where kids go to have fun and hang out in a teen lounge and chat to their youth director. And all of a sudden you've spoken about all this other stuff, which sounds like pretty fancy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's fancy, but it's really about leadership development and giving kids their own play. You know, I think of our youth group as like the young version of the synagogue structure. We often joke and compare notes between the youth group board and the board of directors. We're lucky enough we have a congregation where our youth group president sits on the temple board of directors, and we'll often walk out of those meetings and turn to me and be like, wow, our meetings are more productive than that. What are they doing? But yeah, this is serious stuff. It's fun, but we do have a leadership structure. We have kids who enter our board as ninth graders and work towards being at the top of that board as juniors and seniors, who plan large events for dozens, if not hundreds of kids, who plan services, who plan social action events, who plan social programs, who create community. It's amazing leadership training, and it's amazing training in being an active part of the Jewish community. You know, we hosted a nifty regional convention at our congregation, 2013, I think, and we ended up with 415 kids who participated in the weekend. 100 of them were from our congregation and 300 plus from the rest of the region. And the amount of logistics and programming and everything that went into home hospitality, you know, everything that went into that. And I just remember, and everything went so smoothly. And it was me and, you know, a couple of lay leaders and a bunch of teens. We weren't a professional conference staff, right? And I just remember having the sense of like, I don't know if I can do better than this. We know the impact we have on young people between the ages of 13 and 18. That is the most, you know, the first question you ask me is like, why do I do what I do? Why do I love this? It's because that is to me, the most incredible age for young people. Every part of their life changes between 13 and 18. And I get to be part of that change. I get to be a constant for them as they go through this huge shift from being a kid to being a young adult. And we know from the programming run, the leadership experiences, the social opportunities that we graduate, if you want to use that term, unbelievable humans who are ready to go off to college and ready to go off to the next stage of their lives as mature, thoughtful humans. And not to say that kids who don't do our programs aren't, but we add so much value to their lives. And our kids see it, our parents see it, especially parents who have had one kid who stays involved and one kid who doesn't. They see the differences. If we just had the opportunity to get more of those kids to stick through, I think, you know, it would be a huge impact on the church community.
So this is a footnote to this episode, but I think it's an important one to note, and then I'm going to acknowledge my own hypocrisy. If you are a listener out there who sits on a board of an organization that talks about Jewish teenagers, and you do not have a Jewish teenager or a young adult on your board, you are doing something wrong. So double footnote to myself, we at the Jewish Education Project probably need to rectify that situation sooner rather than later. But I think you're already pointing out some of the important messages here about our young people today, the leadership roles that they can play. And I think this distinction between the youth board as opposed to the adult board is something really fascinating, because I think in many places in today's world, teenagers and young adults have a really active role in society. They're not actually marginalized. Like, they're the ones leading the rally on X, or, you know, putting out the petition for Y. But in some of our Jewish institutions, we still have this like youth version of the real thing. I'm wondering if you can reflect upon that in your experience.
Yeah, it's definitely a work in progress for all of us. But right, we all saw after the tragedy in Parkland, Florida several years ago, what March for Our Lives became. And we actually were really inspired and honored. We hosted a Shabbat program the night before March for Our Lives. It was Shabbat for Our Lives, which our kids helped plan, and inviting, welcoming teens from all over the country to our congregation. We had hundreds of them sleeping on the floor that night. But, you know, our teens, I don't even like the word teen, I'll be honest. I like to call them adults waiting to happen. So that's kind of my catchphrase for that age group. They see the world. They get things. Yeah, they've got learning and development to do, but we all do. And they have so much to add to the conversation. And I think the more we can do that, you know, again, our youth group president sits on our Iron Lake Temple board. Right now, our congregation is going through a search process for an assistant rabbi. They invited two of our youth group board members to be on that search committee. That's a new thing. So listen, I think wherever you're listening, wherever you're involved, you got a young person involved, you'll be amazed at what they might add and the experience it is for them and for the other people that are involved.
So Ira, one of the reasons I really wanted to get you onto today's show is because you've been doing this work over quite a few decades now. And I think there are a couple of parts of that story which are really important. One is that it's not often that you have people involved in this type of work for such extended periods of time, because there's a lot of burnout attached to it. And secondly, the work obviously hasn't stayed the same. So let's talk about some of those changes first of all. So what are some of the biggest differences that you're seeing now with Jewish teen engagement and the work that you do from when you first came on board in this position?
So probably the two biggest changes that I can think of, one is communication. I spent a lot of time printing up flyers and stuffing envelopes and standing in front of a copy machine and whatever it is. And, you know, we definitely save a lot of money not mailing out hundreds of flyers for every event. We used to have envelope stuffing parties, which were a nice way to get kids together and do things. But actually, it's a challenge. And there are days I think that if we just actually put a flyer in an envelope and mailed it now, we'd get way more traction than we do with all the other social media and digital methods that we have, because kids don't get mail in their mailbox. But just trying to figure out all the different communication methods, and depending on which teen you talk to, this one wants it in text, this one wants it on Instagram, this one wants, this is a rare kid who actually checks their email. So just figure out how to communicate and how to get your message across and get their attention, despite the fact that they carry their computers in their hands, it still can be quite a challenge. The other real bigger concern and challenge is that the other things kids do are so much more intense than they were 15, 20, 30 years ago. You know, it used to be that if you are on a varsity team at the highest level, then yes, you were busy all the time with sports. Now we have 6th, 7th, 8th graders who are on, you know, travel teams, and there is no off season. There is, you know, there's practices 6 days, you know, 5-6 days a week. And suddenly the kid who's supposed to go on a retreat weekend can't. Kid has a soccer practice the coach threw in Saturday morning. But regardless of what the activities are, those other extracurricular activities and even the amount of schoolwork and the pressure associated with all of it is more intense than ever. So the phrasing that I use is that, first of all, anytime a young person chooses to be with us, it's a blessing. It's kind of a miracle, but it's just really a blessing that they have chosen to spend their free time, the little bit they have, with us. The other thing is that I think it's really important that we preach a guilt-free program. These kids have so much stress. They're getting so much pressure to be at practices to finish their homework, do all these things, that if a kid says, listen, I can't come this week because of whatever reason, I have a game, I have a practice, I have a test, we say, good luck, I hope it goes great, we'll miss you, and we hope to see you next time. I don't want their Jewish involvement to add stress to their life. I want it to add joy to their life. And if we can be a little bit of a place where they don't have to have that burden, I think we'll be better for it in the long run, even if it sometimes hurts us in the short run.
But how do you compete in terms of these kids are out there building their resumes? And I don't want to be so crass about it, but many of them, like, the pure thing that they're trying to do in this critical time in their life is get into college or advance their personal career. And maybe that's them and their parents or a combination. And you've got this thing which is actually competing for the most precious piece of all, which is their time. So when you tell someone about what you're doing and how it can add value to their life, what are some of the phrases? What are some of the things that you say to them about why being in a youth group actually contributes and adds value to their existence?
That's not actually normally the conversation that I have, right? I don't normally have to, like, do the hard sell. I have to, you know, I think it's about letting kids be kids, letting them have space. I use what I hear from my former teens. You know, those teens who come up to me at their final senior banquet and say, you know, this was the place where I could take the mask off. You know, when I was at my school, I always had to feel like I had to fit into a very particular box. And here I could just come and be myself and relax. And that meant so much to me. And I love the fact that our most involved kids are also active in drama and everything else. These are not kids who are just coming to synagogue. These are kids who are super involved in their schools, and they want to be part of this community. And I think it's just because we create an environment that they just want to be here. We make it fun. We make it positive. We make it worth their time. It's not a joke. You know, I think we take what we do seriously. We don't take ourselves too seriously, if that's, you know, if we can live in that paradox. You know, and I think once kids come, once, twice, they get the sense of what's going on here is special, and they're creating it. You know, we can write all the programs and the retreat weekends and the, you know, whatever we want to write down on paper to, you know, icebreakers, things like that. It's kids make magic happen. It's they take whatever that effort is and turn it into something special.
So I want to pick up on one of the other things you've just pointed to, and that is the stress factor going on in the lives of teenagers today. And I want you to talk a bit about how you've seen that develop over time and what role you see yourself playing in helping young people deal with the issues related to mental health and stress in the world today.
For me and us, the biggest thing is not adding to it. If you want to come and tell me about what's going on with your college process, great. I would love to hear about it. But I'm not going to be the one like, hey, have you heard yet? Have you heard yet? Did you get in? I don't want to add to that. We want to create that space where this is the place you don't have to feel those pressures. Those pressures are out there. And one of my greatest concerns is that the kids who are feeling those pressures the most are the ones who are also not getting involved in youth groups or post-B'nai Mitzvah opportunities because they just don't feel like they have the space for it. And they're the ones who probably could benefit from it the most. We do some programming. We run a self-esteem retreat, which we've done for years and years, which it kind of goes to a bigger kind of central theme of the work we do here, which I hope every congregation does, which is to make sure young people know that we will talk to them about whatever they need to talk about. You know, we can't program for every social issue. We just don't have the time and space for it. But whenever we do deal with major issues, whether it's mental health or anti-Semitism or lots of other things, the most important clear message we want to get out to teens is that we're here, we're available, and there's nothing that we won't talk with you about.
So you do have something up your sleeve or in your repertoire that you are fairly well known for in the youth professional space, and that is your, you know, your work with popular culture and your ability to stay in tune with the trends that young people are going through as well. So talk a bit about that, and I think it's related to social media as well, but what are you doing to stay cool?
Oh, I'm not cool, and I never have been cool, but I'm authentic, I'm true to myself, and I think if you talk to the first group of teens I ever worked with, you talk to the group of teens I'm working with right now, you'd get the same story from them about who I am. You know, I'm just me. So I just think I'm authentic to who I am. I've been the same since I started doing this work. You know, I've lost some even more hair than I had, you know, than I had back then. You know, I need to know enough about some of the basics, but the reality is I don't generally listen to most of the music that my kids today listen to. Some of them, it depends on what they listen to, I guess, but it's about just being aware and keeping your eyes and ears open. I've always been curious about things. And so, you know, I explore and I'm not afraid to open my eyes and ears to something new and different. There's nothing I actually like more than when I can share a song with a teen who's into kind of different music and they can share a song with me or an artist with me. In some ways, that becomes a connection point with the teen. It's funny, I got a text from a student this morning who I'd sent a song to because she's an artist herself and she's into different music. I'm like, oh, have you heard of this person? And she hadn't. she's like, oh, their lyrics are really cool, you know, and that was a jumping off point that wouldn't have been there otherwise.
So I'm sure even that little story is news to some people out there as well. I texted one of my teens, that's not like your biological, that's one of the teens in your youth group, text them a song because she's a musician. Like there's a story in there, which I think you're experiencing like almost on a daily basis that people need to begin to understand. That's the relationship that people are developing with these young people as well. And I'm interested in that light, like how has training changed over time? And just give the audience a sense of the types of trainings you're going through these days.
So I'll be honest, if in some regards, there definitely is there's a lot of newer trainings out there. Camps offer like mental health first aid training, things like that, which didn't exist when I started. I think we also could do a much better job of providing professional development for people who work with teens. I think that I'm in a very lucky position that my congregation has invested in me and in this position over a long time. Most congregations hire people right out of college because that's what they believe they can afford, and then don't provide any resources for them to grow as young professionals. We wouldn't expect a high school teacher right out of undergrad to be able to walk in and teach successfully without a lot of support and help and training. But yet we expect 22-year-old recent college grads to come in as youth directors and have no support network and no training, and good luck. Do a great job.
So this is, by the way, going to be a topic of a future conversation, but I want to get your input on it now as well, because I think it's really relevant to exactly what you're saying. If we're doing things the same way, has enough change in the world that makes us needing to actually rethink this youth movement model in ways, because, you know, so much has changed in the world at large? I know it's a tough question to ask, but I think in some ways it's a really important question. Are the constants driving enough that they are, you know, they maintain the same structure, or do we need to rethink things?
First of all, there has been a decline in youth group membership. There also has been a decline in synagogue membership. I don't think you can look at one without the other. I also think that the work I do is more important now than ever, because as we know, kids are more disassociated with each other and with community than ever before, because there is no hanging out at the mall with your friends, right? It's hanging out online with your friends, which has its benefits. You know, when we even saw that when the pandemic started and we switched to Zoom, we were lucky that most of our kids switched with us. A lot of congregations, the words are kind of going around all the message boards and whatever was, I can't get to my kids. They're not signing on. Ours were. And for us, there were some really great parts to it because we have a very spread out congregation, and suddenly transportation wasn't an issue. But in general, giving kids opportunities to be in community, to have real conversations, to be face to face, to give them reasons, not because we tell them to put their phones away, because they want to put their phones away and be with each other, I think is more important now than ever. And in what format we do that with, we can still figure that out. But I think you need people in places to make those things happen. I'll give you a very real example because it's happening right now. 2 months ago, I ran some youth programs for younger kids with some of my colleagues. And we did very typical, go to the trampoline gym or do, a fun fall festival type program. And it was nice. We had 15, 20 kids come. This Sunday, we're doing a social action project. We have 65 kids signed up. And now we tied it to Hanukkah. We gave families and kids the idea that this is about giving back at a time where we're used to just getting. And we're overwhelmed. I keep on my registration side, I keep upping the event capacity because more kids keep wanting to sign up. So they're looking for something meaningful too.
Ara, I was wondering if you could like share with the audience like one of the pinnacle moments of your career, one of the times when you felt either the most proud or the most moved, or something that stands out to you. It could be an individual instance or experience with a group. I'm not sure. Just sort of like when you look at your career, like what's something that stands out to you as being like one of the high points of your career?
Okay. A couple of years ago, we had a program where we brought in three young journalists, one who was on television, one who's on radio, and one who does print. And two of them were my former youth groupers. And seeing them as professionals, sharing their story with a room full of teens who are there, and seeing the successes that they're having and the stories that they can share about being involved as a teen and how their Jewish values impact their reporting, I had to be careful not to get too emotional because I was just so proud of them and so proud of that moment.
So you just used the phrase, you had to be careful not to get too emotional. And I want to ask you almost the converse question here, because I think it's a part of youth work which people don't often talk about. What have been some of the toughest moments? What have been some of the sadder or more emotional things you've had to deal with? Because you're dealing in a crazy world and you're dealing with the lives at a precarious age. So maybe give an insight to the listeners here about some of the tougher moments you go through as a youth professional as well.
I've lost students. I've lost students to tragedies of different types, and there's nothing harder as a human, as a teacher, as a leader, to have a student be there one day and not the next, and different circumstances in different cases. But I'll pick one particular moment, being at a funeral for a young woman who had tragically taken her own life, and seeing a group of 19, 20-year-old girls, her peers, who had come home from college to be there for the funeral, just holding each other and crying and just being there for each other, which was both lovely and totally heartbreaking. And I walked over to them and I looked in the eye, and we all had tears in my eyes. I'm probably going to have tears in my eyes as I say this. And I said, please just promise me that you will make this much effort to go to each other's weddings as you did to come to today's funeral. Because we sometimes, when we have 6 months, years to plan to get to a wedding, we are, you know, to get to a simcha, we find all the reasons we can't make it happen. When something tragic happens, we drop everything and spare no expense to get home and to be where we need to be. And we need to celebrate the joys as much as we deal with the tragedies.
Thank you. That's just, I mean, I think it really sends a message home to all of our audience here about that we're not just providing programs, that we are providing relationships. And in this context, you're not just a Jewish communal professional, you're a mentor, a role model, a colleague, a friend to so many people that have been through your auspices at the congregation and beyond. And I can talk personally about knowing about your impact on the field of Jewish youth engagement in general. And I think that you talking about these episodes really drives home as to why teen professional work in the Jewish community is so critical and is so important. I also do think you're reflecting about how it's evolved over time as well. And I think it's an important message to send to everybody that your longevity in the field actually tells a story of evolution and what the field has emerged and morphed into over time due to the commitment of people like yourself in this work. So Ira, we're coming to the end of our conversation, and I'd like to ask you the question that I've asked of all of my guests over time, because I think it's so poignant, and especially here we can really feel in your voice how you impact the lives of so many people. But I want to give you the opportunity to pay tribute to an educator in your life who has had a tremendous impact on you.
These are dangerous questions because I feel like, you know, inevitably someone, probably my mom, was going to be upset that I didn't mention her. So hi, mom. Hi, dad. I love you and appreciate all you've done for me. My mom was actually like one of my first religious school principals when I was a much younger child. I also think I can't answer this question without, might sound like a cliche, but hopefully you've heard enough from me in the last bit of time that you know it's authentic. It's teens. Right. Like, I've learned so much from teens over the years, and they are, and I hope I've taught them as much as they've taught me, but I learn from them all the time in every possible way. And so I feel so honored and blessed. I've had so many who were in my life, who remain in my life. I love the fact that I have relationships with them years after they're out of any kind of formal program. But to get to the heart of your question, the person I want to actually mention, who unfortunately won't be able to hear this, is a woman named Risa Buckstein of blessed memory. She was my supervisor at the Colorado Agency for Jewish Education, where I spent 3 years before coming to D.C., and I was on the front lines doing community teen work there, running the Denver Community Israel trip, and being part of the Community Hebrew High School program. And Risa was just really an amazing mentor and supervisor, and really helped me understand that line that we walk between being professional and having fun. I have a very vivid memory of, I was drafting an email to send out to all these families, and I sent it to her to proofread, and she comes back to me, she goes, Ira, this doesn't sound like you. This doesn't sound fun. Make it fun. Make it sound like you. And I went back and because it was a very formal, dear parents, on the third day of whatever, you know, and I went back and I rewrote, and she goes, not only is that you, but the message that you're trying to share comes across much more clearly because your heart is in your email. And so even now, 20 plus years later, I hear her voice in my head regularly, making sure that the messages that I'm sending out and the work that I do represents me and who I am and what I'm about and what we're trying to do here. So I miss her tremendously, and I'm so grateful for the impact she had on me and had on so many people in the Denver community.
Ira, thank you so much for taking the time to join with us on today's show. It was so important for me to have you here as someone who's able to both talk in the here and now of the work you do, but also to be reflective of your time in that role over time. And there's a lot there which resonates with my own personal involvement with the Jewish teen space, and I really appreciated learning from you, and I hope our listeners did as well. Today's episode was produced by Dina Nussenbaum and Miranda Lapidus. The show's executive producers are myself, Karen Cummins, and Nessa Lieben. Our show is engineered and edited by Nathan J. Vaughan of NJV Media. As always, if you enjoyed adapting this season, please leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Even better, share this episode or any others with a friend or a colleague. To learn more about the Jewish Education Project, please visit us at jewishedproject.org, where you can learn about our mission, our history, our staff, and other episodes and features that we do have, including our educator resource portal. As always, we are proud to be a partner of UJF Federation of New York. Thanks, everybody, for listening today.